This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I needed only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
I saw how the world is not made for caregivers and not made for new mothers. The focus is very much on the baby and the child, which, you know, of course it should be. And the problem isn't the needs of the baby or the child. The problem is that we are putting it all on, most often, a mother. The dominant message is you have a baby and then, you know, 6 weeks, bounce back, get back to yourself as soon as possible.
I genuinely thought I was doing it wrong. Something wrong with me because I found it so difficult.
As soon as I read that word and started to research and read and think about this transition, it was just completely transformative, as it is for, you know, many women who find this.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Motherkind. It is me, your host, Zoe. We are proudly sponsored by Wild Nutrition Women's Supplements. If you've been listening to Motherkind for a while, you'll know that I talk a lot about matrescence, that huge psychological, emotional, and identity shift that happens when we become mothers. It's a concept that has helped so many women make sense of an experience that can feel confusing, lonely, and overwhelming. Well, today I am joined by the incredible Lucy Jones, journalist, author of the groundbreaking book Matrescence, and one of the leading voices exploring what motherhood does to us, not just practically, but emotionally, psychologically, and culturally. Lucy spent years researching and writing about matrescence, and she's really helped to bring the concept mainstream. So I know you are going to love this conversation. This is going to be one you are going to want to share. Share this with any mother, especially any new mother or pregnant woman in your life. Here it is. Lucy, this is such an amazing experience because I feel like I know you so well, but the truth is we've actually never met in person.
I can't believe we've never met. I really feel like we have.
Because we have this just most phenomenal thread that weaves through our maternal experience, which is discovering this word matrescence.
Yeah. And I think you were the first person who interviewed me about my book Matrescence. I think we talked before it even came out.
Yeah, because I was so excited.
Yeah.
And I spoke to Dr. Alexandra Sachs in 2018.
Wow.
On Motherkind.
Yeah.
About matrescence.
I think I talked to her around then for The Times. When did you first hear the word then? Was it through her article?
No, I first heard it at the start of 2018 from Dr. Oscar Serelac.
Oh, yes.
Who is that amazing Australian doctor. And I interviewed him, funnily enough, in my car because we didn't have any budget and I had booked a tiny room. He was talking in South London somewhere random and I'd booked a tiny room and it had all fallen through. So I was like, well, I'm not doing the interview. So we did it in this sweaty car because we couldn't have the air conditioning on. Must have been summer. And he said, da 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 da. Well, of course, you know, the woman goes through her matrescence. And he said it like you would say, apple. And I was like, sorry, what did you just say? And he explained it.
Oh, wow.
And that was the moment. And I viscerally remember every part of my body relaxing. Mm. Because at that point, my eldest would have been 2. And I genuinely thought I was doing it wrong. Something wrong with me. I was defected as a woman and mother because I found it so difficult. And he said to me in this kind Australian accent, he was like, oh no, it's your matrescence.
Yeah.
When did you first discover it? Through the TED Talk, was it, Alexandra Sachs?
It was kind of similar to you. I reckon our eldest are probably similar age. My first daughter was born in 2016.
Yeah, same age then.
I think when she was about 9 months old, I read Alexandra Sachs's piece in the New York Times, Birth of a Mother. Mm-hmm. Similar to you, read the word matrescence. It was like a kind of paradigm shift, just like everything changed in my body. And kind of, I was like, oh, okay, this is a thing. This is the big thing that I am experiencing, a lot bigger than our culture and society presents it as. So I read that word in the New York Times piece, and then I went and bought the text by Dana Raphael.
Yes.
Who was the American anthropologist who coined the term in the
1973.
Yeah, in the 70s. So it was a book called Being Female, and it came out in 1974, and it's a collection of essays. And in that, I believe that's the first citation of the word matrescence. And she was an anthropologist who was particularly writing in that essay about the Tikopia people. And there were so many good lines in it, but she talked about how the Tikopia people have a sense of the newborn mother. You know, there's a newborn baby, of course, but there's also a mother is born. And similarly to you, I thought there was something wrong with me. I thought I was defective. I was finding it so difficult. And I just thought this thing has happened that I've always wanted, having a kid and being a mother. And every day is feeling so hard. And then as soon as I read that word and started to research and read and think about this transition, it was just completely transformative, as it is for, you know, many women who find this
Isn't
literature.
Isn't it crazy how it took your book, really, to make that word mainstream? And I don't even think it is yet, but you've done a phenomenal job. But I mean, imagine the millions of women that still don't know. Billions, probably.
Absolutely. I mean, there's lots of people who've done matrescence work, and I think it's Aurélie Athan who brought the word back. And,
yeah.
You know, lots of people have been writing and, you know, making art about matrescence, and you know, my book's just part of that. But I find it, you know, it's so interesting how invisible and how kind of hidden and obscured that transition is in our culture, in kind of Western individualistic culture, compared with, you know, how it is experienced in most cultures and societies across the world, which is as a major transition, a transition which needs support, a transition in which, you know, if the mother has carried the baby, there's obviously recovery from birth and pregnancy, but there's also changes in identity, relationships, sense of self. You know, it's very existential, it's very philosophical, it's very psychological, it's very emotional, it's all of these things. Mm. And yet, you know, the dominant message is you have a baby and then, you know, 6 weeks, bounce back, you know, get back to yourself as soon as possible. And, you know, the focus is very much on the baby and the child, which, you know, of course it should be. We live in a world where we know a lot more about what babies need and what children need. And the problem isn't the needs of the baby or the child. The problem is that we are putting it all on, most often, the mother. And that is completely opposite to our evolutionary history. You know, we evolved in these caregiving networks and collective groups. We are collaborative breeders. We're not meant to be kind of breeding in isolation and with this huge amount of weight on the individual, often woman, mother. So it's been, you know, from that moment of reading Matrescence, and I'm sure it's similar to you, you know, it took me on so many paths of, you know, trying to understand this current moment of modern motherhood and the institutions around it, which are making it really hard.
That's what I love most. Many things I love about the word and the concepts that sit under it. One of them I love the most is that for a long time, you couldn't say, I'm finding it hard, because people would say, well, don't you love your child? And there would be that sort of guilt and shame of even saying it out loud. And I think that isolated us further. What matrescence does just so amazing is it separates the two, doesn't it? There's like the love that I have for my child, solid, all there, incredible. And through my matrescence, there's these structures and these institutions and these norms and the belief which make stepping into that role really difficult. And I love that we've got a word now to separate the two so that we stop shaming women for saying they're finding it hard.
Exactly. And it, you know, it's through language that we can connect and care for each other. And we can say, you know, how's your matrescence? Or, you know, how was your matrescence? Or how's your putrescence? You know, it's obviously a biological, cultural, psychological experience for men as well. Fathers, of course. And I really like that kind of complicating of the experience. And it reminds me of Adrienne Rich, who wrote Of Woman Born in the 70s. And she was a poet and an essayist. And I read Of Woman Born in the first year of our first child's life. And that was another kind of transformative moment for me, because she was describing her experience of becoming a mother in the 50s. And I could relate to, you know, so much of what she was saying about what it was like. But what she gives us is this distinguishing between the experience of motherhood and the institution of motherhood, which allows us to critique the institution of motherhood and the social systems and structures, which are not ideal and need to change, while also kind of separating that from the experience of motherhood and the children. I think that's really important, because there's still so much repression and suppression and taboo around talking honestly about motherhood and early motherhood. You know, it really seems as though if you say anything negative or complaining, scare quotes, for those listening, you know, an automatic feeling can be that you're not grateful for your children. And I think that, you know, that's really, we need to move past that. And, you know, this language gives us a chance to talk about the whole spectrum of the experience.
Yeah, it's so true. Particularly, I think, if you've had a difficult journey to pregnancy, I think that gets magnified then, because people think, well, I've wanted this and I've fought for it in many ways. And, you know, it's been years. And that's self-silencing.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there's partly a cultural kind of like a dominant cultural idea of the mother figure, you know, and a kind of romantic maternal ideal where, you know, we all want mothers to be perfect and to adore their children. And, you know, the kind of ideal is this self-sacrificial figure who's kind of perfect and obviously fantasy. But at the same time, the patriarchal narrative denigrates care work and, you know, denigrates the work of growing and birthing babies and also the work of caring for infants and children. So I think mothers are left in this weird kind of swamp of this, you know, the pedestal mother figure, and then the reality of it being kind of seen as, you know, drudge work. Or
I love when you talk about it in the book. There's two, I mean, there's many lines that I love. One of them is that you talk about how maybe in your 20s, and I would be the same, you would think, well, maybe it's kind of boring to be a mum. But actually, it's like this socioeconomic kind of spiritual awakening, like the most exciting sort of challenging thing that's ever happened to you. Me too. I mean, it's just phenomenal how, like you say, it's just like, oh, it's just, she's just a mum. And the other thing that I love that you say is, you know, it's life and death work. And it really is. We give these women, us mothers, you know, often injured from birth, often traumatized from birth, exhausted. Like, I hadn't slept. I had a home birth. I hadn't slept for 40 hours. And then I get left on my own for like 8 hours with this fragile. It's kind of insane, isn't
it? It's totally insane. I mean, it's for a social species, you can see how kind of catastrophic something like that could be, that we're, you know, we're not the individual, independent, kind of machine-like citizens that, you know, we're told we are. We are social beings, and we need each other. And the fact that, you know, that you could be left alone for 8 hours after giving birth is just, I mean, what is that? That's just crazy. You know, it's like a complete, like the whole system is against our evolution and against the way our nervous systems evolved. But I think it's really interesting how, I mean, I think I was probably quite naive. I hadn't really grown up around children or babies. You know, I had been, you know, privileged in a way to be kind of educated in a particular way and given a lot of opportunities kind of in my career and to travel and to, you know, be independent in a way. But at the same, and although I always wanted to have kids, when I became a mother, I really realized that I had this kind of internalized misogyny, kind of internalized like matrophobia almost, that the work I was doing was both like the most important work I could ever do. And I really had to get it right, because if I didn't, she'd be in therapy for the rest of her life. But at the same time, you know, our political economy is telling me this is not valued. You know, this is not even included in GDP. This is non-work, you know. So again, it's this kind of paradox and conflict. But I found that really interesting and really illuminating and revealing of the social context. I mean, I guess I'd probably never, you know, in my life, being as I've, you know, racialized white and middle class and like socially material privileged, I'd never kind of experienced kind of any kind of oppression. And, you know, while I would hesitate to say that I have been oppressed, obviously, there is something about the class of mothers in our society, which I think you could say there is a sense of oppression. We don't have adequate maternity care. You know, the rate of maternal death is increasing. Mm. You know, we don't have adequate postpartum care. Like the amount of misinformation and kind of lack of research around how our brains change, how our bodies change. There's like a complete lack of public services around family. And I know that they're bringing back Sure Start kind of children's centres. But, you know, it was in those early months, as I walked through the world with a baby, that I saw with new eyes, you know, how the world is not made for caregivers and, you know, not made for new mothers. You know, lack of lifts at stations, no areas in public transport for prams, you know, lack of affordable, high quality childcare, lack of paternity leave, like the whole system around having a family and becoming a mother is so lacking in kind of care and thought, as you well know.
And how did you? You've obviously had thousands of conversations at this point on this kind of subject. How do we hold those two things, right? That we know that we're in this kind of system that doesn't value non-paid work, all the structures are against us, and yet kind of here we are. How, when you speak to women that have read your book, how do we, I guess one is sort of, we recognise that to take the pressure off ourselves, right? What else are the things that we can do to, I don't want to say make it easier, but I kind of do want to say make it easier. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And yeah, I mean, I think like you say, realising the social context of, you know, what maternity, how maternity is kind of situated is really important in taking the pressure off. And I think that's no small thing. So in the, you know, I've been so privileged to hear from so many people since publishing Matrescence. And I always thought when I wrote the book that I was quite particularly neurotic and I had quite a lot of shame. You know, and a lot of it, you know, I thought, oh, I'm just making kind of a big deal about all this stuff. But what I've learned, and it's kind of bittersweet, is how much shame so many people carry and how silencing that is. So a lot of the messages that I get, there's a pattern, which is, and I'm sure you get the same, you know, thank you for your book. I feel very seen by it, very relatable, and I haven't been able to express this, and I felt so much shame, and it's, you know, been corrosive or damaging. So my sense is that actually knowing the way that we are not centering care in our society makes it very difficult for like everyday women, often in modern motherhood, is hugely valuable, because once that shame can be lifted, you can say to someone at a baby group, or, you know, like, shall we maybe try and like keep the library open, or shall we write to our MPs about kind of the maternity unit, or, you know, there's kind of little ways, or even can I help you like pick up your kid after school sometime? You know, it's a way of saying we need to kind of support each other and we need to create a different society. But it's really difficult. I think constantly, what is to be done? You know, how can we change this vast system where, you know, profit is centre rather than care or well-being? It's, you know, I kind of go between thinking, you know, I've just got to focus on the everyday, get my kids to school, stay well, stay healthy-ish, you know, and then thinking, this whole thing is insane. Like, it's bonkers.
What would you do? What were the changes if you could make three kind of big structural changes? What would those three be?
I think, I really like the work of economists like, you know, Kate Raworth and Donut Economics, and, you know, this idea of kind of putting well-being and health and care, you know, at the centre of how we organise society. It feels that if care isn't valued and kind of reproductive labour isn't valued in a way that, you know, nature isn't valued, or then it becomes a place of kind of where the economy can kind of free ride on it. So it feels like it's extracted from, you know, and I think that, you know, there's a similarity between, and, you know, people have always said this, you know, planet, women, people of colour, you know, this kind of move to extract as much as possible. I don't know how we correct that, but I think that, you know, seeing it for what it is probably a first step. And I mean, saying that, I have this thought in my head, everyone's so tired, you know, like I would really like to do more, you know, community organising or volunteering, or, you know, be out on the streets more, but I'm knackered.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think about this idea of like building our own village, and I have done that, but it took me years because I was too tired to build my own village.
Yeah.
So tired.
Yeah. Exactly. And then I guess you, in a way, I don't know how old your youngest is, but my youngest has just gone to school. So in a way, I feel like I've built the village and I've gone through that kind of early matrescence. Although I wonder what you think about this, but I imagine matrescence always is there and changes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think then you have, I mean, you're not doing this because you're still working in this area, but I think you might often have, and lots of other people obviously too, but who would kind of go through matrescence and then, you know, life is really busy and then you're kind of past that point. And so, you know, that really vulnerable, intense moment of those early years kind of gets a bit forgotten or moved on from.
Yeah.
You know, and I think also there's probably a level of like, so if people have experienced trauma as well, you know, birth trauma, or it's like, oh, I don't even want to go there anymore. It's kind of, you know, there's so many reasons why matrescence and early motherhood are hidden and disavowed and made invisible. You know, I feel like it's a constant work, as you do, to look at that period and to look at pregnancy and to look at birth and to look at early years childcare, you know, because it's so not a priority politically or, and there's, and of course there's cultural reasons, like, you know, people, like, look at breastfeeding in public. Like, no one wants to look. I'm very happy to look at breastfeeding, but like lots of people don't want to see breastfeeding, You know, we still live in that world where, like, people feel like they can't even breastfeed their kids, like, out and about. It's just, you know, there's so much going on there to hide it.
It's so true. And it's fascinating to me how, you know, we've been in this kind of maternal motherhood world a while together now. And it's like, you know, I'll see the new podcast and everyone's like, oh, have you seen the new podcast? I'm like, yeah. But I think to myself, I suspect that that will run for a season and then go away. And that typically is what happens, because I think you're right. I think when you're in it, or when you're just out of that maternity experience, you feel very passionate, right? And that, you know, lots of the celebrities all write the books and da-da. And then it's kind of, then you move on and the focus moves on. And I think that happens a lot. Mm. And I often wonder, what is it about me and you, right, that's kept us in this space? And I think for me, it's that there's always so much to learn. Like, I've been doing this for 8 years, week in, week out. I've never missed a week, and I am not bored.
Yeah.
And doesn't that say so much about just how much there is to say and to understand and to unpack? And every single time I sit down with someone, I learn something new.
Yeah. But it's so, I mean, a metamorphosis is just interesting, isn't it? Like, because it's a state of change and transformation. So that's just interesting, like, on a narrative, dramatic level. But then you also have, you know, the spiritual, existential aspect, you know, the bodily aspect, the politics and the economics of it.
Yes.
Psychology, your own childhood, your intergenerational stuff. You know, it's a really kind of depicted, underwritten, underrecorded experience, I think. And, you know, while it's presented as most often banal or mundane,
just
or boring, like, you know, in like the films that we grew up in, like the American films, like thinking about like Beethoven or something. I was watching Beethoven the other day with my kids. Like, the mum is just like nothing.
She's just in the background.
Whatever.
Cooking.
Yeah, just cooking. But it's like becoming a mother and being a mother, and you know, it's so gnarly, it's so grisly, and it's so psychological and emotional, and
it's hardcore, like,
it's hardcore. Yeah, it's not. I mean, there's obviously been like a lot more cultural depictions, like, you know, Tully and you know, other things, but I feel like we need a lot more of that. But just going back to what you were saying about this period sometimes being moved on from.
Mm.
I feel like for me, it's opened up so many avenues of different types of thought and learning, and particularly, you know, the problem of valuing care. I mean, that's not going anywhere, and that's a very central problem in our society. That is like a central question. Like, how do we value care?
Yeah, and how do we, you know, it's the elderly as well, isn't it?
Exactly.
The statistics around the unpaid care that our generation are doing for our kids and our parents.
Yeah.
It's just...
Yeah, it's kind of the stalled, I think it's Arlie Hochschild who called it the kind of the stalled revolution. Mm. You know, there's this, you know, feminists have won so much for us, so many rights for us. But this area of care and reproductive labour is... You know, it's not solved. That sounds too kind of mechanistic, but the amount of women I know who are burnt out, I mean, literally, it's like, I don't want this for my daughter, you know, to go through kind of 30s and 40s if she wants to have kids, and to feel totally burnt out for like a number of years. It's not the thriving or flourishing of all people that...
Have you felt burnt out? Because I imagine the book took on a life of its own.
Yeah, definitely. So after the book came out, I maybe it was a year later or so, I had a period of quite bad burnout and depression. Mm. I think it was like a couple of years ago, like maybe a year after my third child was born. So I wasn't really expecting that. It kind of came out of the blue. And it was, yeah, burnout, I guess. And I'm much better now. But, yeah, it was really hard.
Did you recognise the signs? Did you know what was going on?
I think that I felt... I think since my first child was born, amid all the, like, abundant joy and contentment and reward. I think I was have been basically in fight or flight, kind of constantly, with sleep deprivation and various like psychological stuff coming up. And then, you know, the juggle of work and motherhood. And there were periods then it got a little bit easier when I had my sons. But then I think when my youngest was about two, I think I was doing a lot of kind of talking about matrescence in the book. And I'm quite a shy, introverted person. But yeah, it just kind of took a bit of a toll the whole time. And I got quite unwell. But I've had depression on and off all my life, so I recognised what was happening, and it took a little while to fully recover. But I'd say for about a year, I've been feeling much better. Mm. And in terms of burnout, I think that started to really lift when my child went to school, my last child, and he's only started sleeping through the night. Ish in the last kind of few months. So I think for about a few months I've had a lot more.
So you've had a decade of sleep deprivation,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I actually feel okay though now. I mean, there was a time a few years ago where I thought, is this life? Like, am I going to feel this tired and kind of run down forever? But no, I
it's
feel
so
much
hard
better.
As well, isn't it? Because you know, most of the burnout, I've had loads of experts and doctors in burnout, and a lot of the advice is about stepping back, taking rest. It's like, it doesn't work. Mothers. I had an amazing doctor who burnt out with two kids in her GP, and she gave phenomenal practical advice, right? But in the general literature, it's like, step back, take a rest, get signed off sick. You can't get signed off sick from looking after a two-year-old.
No, exactly. That's it. You can't. There's not much you can do in my experience. I mean, I have, you know, my husband is like super there and supportive, and you know, I don't know what would happen if he wasn't there. But I think there's also a lot going on there, isn't there? Like, I found that I had like a B12 deficiency, so as soon as I got on injections for that helped. I got PMDD after having kids. Like, I'd always had quite bad PMS, but it escalated. So once I'd sorted that out with some like treatment, that really helped. There was just all this kind of mind body stuff which was also contributing. So I had, you know, after my third delivery was quite traumatic, I had like really heavy periods for like a year or two, and to the point where I became like almost anemic, you know, all these things which are so anathema to like the 6 week bounce back idea.
It's just the worst gaslight ever, isn't it, that we've given women? Just bounce back.
It really is. And there's so many different things that can happen in kind of pregnancy and birth. Like, I haven't really been able to exercise really since that third birth properly. And like, you know, again, that's like with burnout, you get told like, sort your diet out, do your exercise, rest, or like chill exercise, whatever. You know, step back. Mm. It's very hard to do that when you're looking after young kids and eating whatever you can grab and have no time to exercise.
It's wild, isn't it? What we go through as women, and I talk about this, it's almost like we make it hard squared because it's really hard, but then we make ourselves wrong for finding it hard.
Yes, and that's awful.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I have a really good thing with another friend, which we started a few years ago, called Listening Time, where when we were really in the throes of it, we'd go for a walk with our babies in the pram, and we'd have half an hour each.
I love that.
Where we just talk, and it's been so good. And we on a WhatsApp voice note.
Did you get that from Hand in Hand Parenting?
I think, yeah. It was her idea, and I think she got it from that. It was so good.
Yeah.
And now, you know, we like leave each other voice notes and stuff whenever kind of things are coming up. And you know, so much of it, I notice, is just not letting myself feel the plain hardness of it.
Yeah.
Or feeling like beating myself up for finding it hard, or thinking, I have so much privilege, like how am I finding this hard? You know, and actually that's just so counterintuitive.
I do it all the time to myself, you know. Mm. I beat myself up that I haven't reached enough women.
You've reached so many women.
I beat myself up.
you've reached so many.
I'm like, how?
Maybe no one has reached more.
I look at those male podcasts, right, who that reach like 10 million a week, and I'm like, you should be doing that for women. That's where I beat myself up. Isn't that mad?
Yeah, but that's not you. That, I mean, you could, I don't think you could reach more. You're doing such a service. But I guess there's something about motherhood which, those podcasts are much more, I don't know, kind of, motherhood is still kind of hidden, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
It's seen as a, you should be on those podcasts, by the way.
Yeah, wouldn't
they should be getting you on there.
Well, they tend to, yeah, those big male podcasts, they have like one or two guests on motherhood, super polarizing.
I've heard.
Super unhelpful.
Yeah, I've heard those about like guilting mothers,
guilting
basically.
Mothers, you shouldn't be using childcare. Yeah. It's just...
Yes!
It's wild.
No.
It's wild. But I have to check myself a lot on that.
Mm.
And it's like, Zoe, what? Stop!
Yeah. But it's if you can... One of the things that I've kind of learned, I think, is as soon as I hear those voices coming in, like, just like, yeah, try and just be like, no, I'm not even going to listen to that.
Exactly. Right, quick fire round that is actually not so quick fire because it's quite deep. What's something that you used to value before motherhood that you no longer do?
So I wouldn't say I valued this, but I clearly did because it was a part of my personality. But I'd say perfectionism. Mm. So I used to think before having kids that it was a thing, whatever, art, music, whatever, wouldn't be worth doing unless I was good at it. And if I wasn't good at it, it wouldn't be worth doing, or it would be like embarrassing. And I've really let go of that through watching my children and through seeing them play and experiment with art and mark making. So I don't hold myself to those like perfectionist standards. I do with my work, I do with my writing, but I don't generally in life hold myself to those perfectionist standards anymore. Or I think I used to value kind of controlling for outcomes. And I think motherhood has taught me that that's a fantasy and it's impossible. And in a way, I think I brought my perfectionism into my early motherhood experience because I felt that anything I got wrong would be catastrophic. I was very scared about getting things wrong and what, the damage that could cause.
Yeah, me too.
And I think I've loosened that. You know, obviously I try as hard as I can not to make many mistakes, but if I do, I can repair. But I'm not thinking I can control outcomes in the same way as I used to think, in a kind of, from an anxious place.
It's quite freeing, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'm making they're crap, but I make like, I love lino and making little art pieces and, it's totally rubbish, but I shouldn't say that, that's stupid, but like it's play, and it's fun. And that's not something I would have done before.
If your first time pregnant self was sat here, what would you say to her?
It's so hard, that one, isn't it? Mm. I think I'd say something like, it's going to be quite rough. It's going to be really challenging, but it will get better. And you will find your feet.
You don't want to scare her.
Okay, maybe that's
equally,
a bit too
scary.
Well,
no, I don't think that is scary. But
well, I think what I would do, because if I'm talking to myself, I would like an ecology metaphor. And the one that I use in the book and I love is, I would say you're in a cocoon, you're entering a cocoon, and you think that you're a caterpillar and that you're going to sprout wings. And that's not what's going to happen. Instead, you are going to dissolve into goo for a while. Mm. Might be a bit longer than you expect. For me, it was about 2 years, I'd say. But you will dissolve into goo, but there will be things that remain of you, and then there will be other things that come, and then you will grow wings, and then you will come out of the chrysalis, and you will come out. And it will be okay.
That's really beautiful. I think all pregnant women should know that, which is what Matrescence teaches, of course. Motherhood is teaching me ...
I'm probably boring everyone about all my chat about capitalism and political economy, but I do think that motherhood is teaching me quite a lot about politics and about kind of value and about the kind of insanity and inadequacy of our way of organising society and our kind of political economy. I think as motherhood, you know, my kids are 9, 7 and 5 now, and as, you know, motherhood develops, I feel more and more that we need to create a society which centres care and nurture and thriving and flourishing of all life. So yeah, a bit of a weird answer, but that's probably it.
And what's one gift you would give to all the mothers in the world and why?
I really like this initiative in that I've heard about in Bogota, Colombia, where they have this thing called care blocks, so in shopping malls. So I spent a lot of my early motherhood walking around shopping mall with my baby in a pram.
Same.
Yeah, and like really loving the library, but feeling quite lonely and isolated. And, you know, I found that loneliness quite cold and hard and kind of gnawing. You know, it was quite, you know, no reason, no surprise that loneliness, you know, can lead to depression. And these care blocks, I think, are just genius. So they're a place in a shopping mall where caregivers can go, new mothers can go, you can wash your clothes, you can even do a yoga class, you can have a rest, someone will hold your baby, you can have a sleep, you can eat something, you can be around other caregivers. So what I would do is give any new mother something like a care block, something walkable, in a public space, free, where they could go and be among other people and have that element of relief, like to be able to rest. Mm. Because so many of us don't have our family close by. And it's really difficult, I think, if you've been brought up self-reliant, independent, to ask for help or to accept help. So, yeah, giving everyone a care block would be my gift.
Oh, I love that. I'm thinking now, like business plans for care blocks in.
Yes, like, do it.
Get one in every Westfield.
Yes, exactly. It's got to happen. And whenever I mention care blocks, people are like, oh, yes.
Yes.
I can't remember the name of the mayor of Bogota who started it, but it's so good. It's so genius.
I love that. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
I mean, it's so felt nice. Like... known you forever.
You
have
too.
Known you for a while.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Zoe. Where can someone, I mean, Matrescence, obviously, I suspect everyone listening will have read it, but if not, you have to. And what else have you got coming up? Have you got any talks or?
Have I got any? I'm not doing so much at the moment because I'm finishing a new book. Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit on Instagram. I try not to do Instagram too much because I find it really addictive.
Same.
I just get really sucked in. But I do have an Instagram and I have a website.
We'll link all that below.
Cool.
Thank you. That was the episode. I hoped you loved it. If you did, please make sure you subscribe and I will see you next time.